Welcome to High Strangeness, where we ask questions and explore all that is strange and unexpected in our reality.
Welcome to High Strangeness. I'm Tony, and this is a place where we talk about all things strange and unexpected in our reality. Today, we have a random strangeness episode where we talk about three or four different topics, and I've got co-host Anthony on the show with me today. What's up, buddy-o? What's going on?
Not much. Just hanging out.
How's just it going living you? Your life, huh? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Anthony, I did want to ask you a quick question here as we get started real quick. I'm excited because your son, my grandson, is now doing Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Mm-hmm. That's so awesome. I love that, and I'm glad that he's doing that. I wanted to ask you, because I see some videos here and there, but how's he coming along? Is he loving it? What's going on?
He's good. He was confused at first because he's done baseball the last couple of years, but he's never done like a contact sport. So when he was first wrestling, he was like smiling, but also being choked. And then he would stand up and be like, what the heck's this kid's problem? Like, why is he being so rough with me? So that was the first few classes. He couldn't just quite understand that the sport. And we had to have some conversations with him that, you know, basically was like, hey, you want to try to do these things that make them feel uncomfortable, but you don't want to be mean, but you don't want to joke. You want to be serious. And then when it's over, then you can be friends again. Like, it's like this random trying to explain that. But so that's how it was for the first month or so. And then now he's starting to get it a little bit, still messes around a little bit, but now he's starting to understand a little bit more of the point of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And, and he's starting to get a little more competitive, like when they're grappling or whatever, if he can get someone to submit, even though the submission is like not even a real submission. Like, he'll just hug the kid really hard or something and the kid will tap out. He'll still look at me and be like, got one. Yeah. You know, so he is getting that. He is understanding that and he is going for it. But the moves and the technique, you know, they'll come when they come. And the coach is already like, so are you thinking about putting him in competition? And I was like, well, let's see if he can, submit someone in class, like a real one. If he can do a couple submissions, I think at that point it would be fun to put him in a little competition, because they do competitions every like 4 or 5 months around this area. So, you know, let's not get ahead of it, but if he can get some moves going, sure, we can throw him into one of those and see how he feels.
Yeah. Well, and for everybody out there, he's only 7, but he's taking this on, yeah. And I think it's really cool. So.
Yeah, there's a lot of benefits to doing something like this. My wife is, her heart is soft, and so she sees them rolling around, and his face is turning red while someone's trying to choke him or whatever, and she's like, you know, this isn't, we got to take him out of this. This is not the thing. And I said, well, you know, he needs to know what it feels like in case this ever happens in real life, right? He needs to understand these things, because I feel like it's the kids that don't understand or have any knowledge. They're the ones that end up hurting someone. Like, they don't know when they're choking, they don't know when to let go. Or maybe they're the ones being choked. I don't know, right? You can go on both ways. But so I think it's a really good thing for kids to know, not just jiu-jitsu, but any martial art.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I will tell you this, though. He, I love him in his blue gi. So he's got this karate suit. It's a jiu-jitsu karate suit. It's blue. It looks great on him. And he's got that new haircut that I just
like. I think he looks awesome. Not quite a mohawk, but like a faux hawk. Yeah, he looks tough. I saw him with that haircut, and I said, man, wish my hair would grow that long, because I would do that too. That's a pretty tough-looking haircut.
Yeah, I love it. So, yeah, that's fun to watch. I'm going to try to get out there and watch some of his stuff here.
Yeah.
So, Anthony, quick question for you. You know, each year it was easier in the past because new shows would start in September. You could watch them all year and then, you know, something else in the summer. Now, I feel like seasons of shows are starting and stopping all over the year. So you don't know when it starts and stops. But one of the things that your mom and I like to do is pick a new show or two each year, and we kind of watch it through the season. So we kind of screen through a few and find something we like. This year it was a show called The Doc. I don't know if you've heard what that is, but that's a show on regular primetime TV kind of.
And it's I think I've seen commercials for it, but I don't know
anything
about it. I didn't watch it.
It's about a 40-some-year-old doctor. She was a chief medical doctor for her hospital, and she's not well-liked. She gets into a car accident and loses her memory for 8 years, the most recent 8 years. And in that time, she basically doesn't remember that she's now divorced and that one of her children had passed away. So that's what the story is about, her getting, trying to get her memory back and once again so that she can practice medicine. Good show. We like it. We enjoy it. But the reason why I bring it up is because there was an episode that came up recently where there was a girl on the show. She was in college and her father was upset that he'd let her go because she came into the hospital sick and she didn't know why. Anyway, what really happened with this is she had a condition where she couldn't feel any stimulus, pain, nothing. And so he was always watching over his daughter throughout her whole life, making sure that she was very careful. But now she was in college, she begged to do it. He let her go, and he was kind of getting upset and blaming her for allowing herself to get sick. And the episode is kind of like, it shows why it wasn't her fault and that she was trying to take care of herself. Anyway, it was a good episode, but it reminds me of our first topic today, right? Our first topic is something that I'm going to bring up after this picture. Do you remember what this picture is right here?
Yeah, this is young Frankenstein.
Yeah, young Frankenstein. And what has he done right here with his thumb? So for those who can't see this.
He's lit his thumb on fire.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it was the old guy that he went into that cottage and he couldn't see, remember? Mm-hmm. And so he was going to smoke a cigar and he said, let me light your cigar. But he lit Frankenstein's thumb. Mm-hmm. And instead, his thumb gets on fire. And here's another picture of Frankenstein going, ah, my thumb's on fire. I love that movie, right?
Yeah, that's a great
movie. Fun movie.
Which, by the way, at the time of this recording, it's April, and my wife and kids hassled me because the other day when we were driving together, I said, it's time, and I started playing Halloween music. And my kids loved it, but my wife was like, no, not yet. And I said, we got to start thinking about it. It's already April. We're already a few months behind. We should have been thinking about this in February. Right. Where we're going to be and all that. So I love that.
Well, that's not that far off because this episode, for those of you out there, I do a random strangest every month. So we are trying to get this done before the summer. This episode's actually going to come out in August, it looks like. Oh, so, okay,
perfect.
There you go. It'll be perfect right before.
So everyone should be listening to Halloween music about now then. As you're listening to this podcast afterwards, I expect you to turn on Thriller, the Monster Mash, things like that, you know, just to start getting in the groove for the next 60 to 120 days.
Got to do it. So, okay. Our first issue here or condition is a medical condition called CIPA, congenital insensitivity to pain. It's a situation where the disease can present at birth, and it affects the person's ability to feel any physical pain. It's caused by a mutation in a specific gene that they can get this mutation. Well, they have to get it from both parents, actually, and it actually causes this problem in the child. And it's hard to tell, right? Like you wouldn't know, especially a child, that they would even have this condition at first without something really weird happening.
Yeah, this is one of those things, you know, we talk about medical conditions and in a previous episode talked about how fragile the human body is, the ecosystem that, you know, allows us to function the way that we do. But there's a few syndromes out there when you hear it, the first thought is like, well, that's not so bad. Right. And then you dive into it and say, well, oh, okay, that one thing in theory is not bad, but because of all the other parts of your life that it affects, it is bad, right? It can really mess things up. This is one of those. When I hear that, I'm like, man, lucky.
Yeah.
Can't feel pain? That is so cool. Like, that's almost superhero. Except for the fact that superheroes can't get, like, they're also very durable. And you are not. So pain is caused to help preserve the body. So if you're not feeling it, that could be issues. I mean, I think initially it'd be cool, but once you start having a lot of different issues, like internally that you can only feel, you wouldn't be able to feel that pain.
Yeah, it could definitely be a problem. And we're going to talk about that in just a minute because it is, right? I mean, that pain is there for a reason. If not, who knows what would happen to us. In fact, there's a movie that's out about now. I haven't had a chance to see it. I think it's called Novocaine. Have you heard of that? So I think the actor in it is Jack Quaid from The Boys, the young guy.
Hmm. I haven't heard of it, no. I feel like I've heard of it, but I don't know off the top of my head. I have to check it out.
Well, the premise of the film, once again, I haven't seen it, but from the, you know, commercials and stuff, it's kind of this, like he can't feel pain. And so he starts doing stuff and, you know, there's one part where something impales him in the back and he's like, hey, what is that? But, you know, he's not durable. He's just a normal guy, but he can't feel pain. So
interesting.
It's
looks like that could be good.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing it eventually here. So, you know, let's see. People with this condition can feel the distinction between a sharp and a dull object, maybe because of pressure. They can feel that something's different about cold and hot. However, they can't sense a hot beverage that's burning their tongue. So it's kind of weird. It's more pressure, I think.
Yeah, and I've heard like people that bite their lip, you know, they don't know. And so they're damaging, you know, inside the lip, or they have blood in their mouth and they're like, well, that's weird. You know, and they just continually do it. I bit my lip this morning and, I, you know, every time I eat throughout the day, I'm biting my lip again. And I'm like, you know, but that person could be doing that all day, just constantly chewing and not have any clue.
Wouldn't even know it. Yeah. Well, see this picture on the screen here with this dislocated broken finger. One time I was coaching high school football and I went to block a punt during practice from somebody and the ball hit my hand and I did block the punt. But then when I just felt boom on my hand. And then I happened to look down at my hand and my finger was like this. It was like sideways. And I was like, So I had to kind of quickly snap it back into position. But, you know, I felt that something happened, even though it wasn't very painful at the moment. But this is what people go through that have this. They don't even know. They could be walking around with a toe the wrong direction and they wouldn't even know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was saying. When I looked into it, it said essentially that, like, there's no cure. It's just people can be getting hurt. They could get frostbite. They could have heat strokes. They could have a number of different things and have no idea. And it could be repeated. You know, they could break a bone and not even know. You could break a toe or do something and you're like, why can't I walk right? Look right down and your leg's all funky. The other thing, too, I didn't know about this is sweating issues.
Yes.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I
did. They have problems sweating.
That's weird. I'm trying to figure out why that would be.
Yeah, it says many with CIP, especially HSANIV, can't sweat properly, leading to overheating and fevers, particularly in hot climates. That one I thought was very interesting. I would not have taken that as being... But if you think about it, I guess, like, what is sweat? Sweat is the body reacting to being overheated, right? So maybe on a micro level, the body's uncomfortable. We're not feeling that pain necessarily, but maybe it's triggering some kind of pain receptacle saying, hey, this is uncomfortable, and that's what causes our body to sweat. Yeah. And so maybe that whatever that nerve is or that sensor is all tied into the same network of things that are affected by CIP.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. I thought initially the same thing. I was like, that's really weird. It reminds me of the fact that they say that you can lose smell too. Now, that's a weird one to me. Not sure how that ties into things, but you know that's going to affect their ability to taste things. Mm-hmm. So that's really weird.
That's a side note. One of the co-founders of Ben & Jerry, he can't taste. And really? So that's why Ben & Jerry's has huge chunks of brownies and different things in their ice cream, because that was his thing. Is he was like, okay, we'll make ice cream, but he wanted to focus on the texture. So since he couldn't taste it, it's all about what he could put inside of it. So one of them, you know, one of the guys could taste, the other one couldn't. And that's part of what made them become a very popular brand was that. So anyway, just side note there.
Wow. That's kind of like somebody who can't hear learns how to play the piano or something. Same thing. So he couldn't taste. That's really bizarre, but
yeah,
kudos to him for coming up with some pretty cool ice cream. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so one thing that's interesting about all this is they say that with the CIPA, you can kind of live a normal life if you're careful. You just got to check for injuries, make sure that you don't have cuts, bruises, and that, of course, you don't mutilate your lower leg or something like that. They say 20%, however, of kids under 3 with this condition do pass away because of hypothermia. So once again, the whole, you know, body temperature thing becomes an issue.
Yeah, and the same thing with, it wasn't pancreas, it was an appendix, I think. You know, how do you know if you have problems with the appendix is you feel it.
Right.
There's things that you feel and then you're like, something's not right. And with kids, if they feel that way, they'll cry, they'll get irritable, right? It'll trigger the parent to hopefully take them in and ask those questions that would identify that. But they never feel that.
Yeah.
Right. So they never complain. So that was another big one for kids, I think, where it really affects, well, not just kids, but adults as well, but really affects them.
Right. We got this picture on the screen now that looks pretty uncomfortable. I wouldn't want that to happen to my leg. But of course, this person probably didn't know because they have this condition. I'm going to tell you a couple quick stories real quick here about some examples. Person named Stefan Betz is a young child. Parents initially believed he was mildly mentally retarded. And the father said, we couldn't understand why he was so clumsy. He was constantly bumping into things and getting all these bruises and cuts. Neither of the parents had this condition, but eventually around the age of 5, they realized something was wrong here. The little boy accidentally bit the front of his tongue off completely. Whoa. Completely off, yeah. And he wasn't in pain, so they knew something was really strange at that point. And shortly afterwards, he also fractured his right hand and just jumping around, you know. Actually, I think it was down a flight of stairs he was playing and broke his hand. Didn't even know it. So, dang. You know, this young person, Stefan Betz, had been in the hospital really more times than most people because of this. And to this day, he's got a slight limp in his leg due to an infection from a bone fracture he received while skateboarding when he was younger and didn't even know it.
Hmm. Wow.
So these things can happen. And just one more quick story. Actually, the BBC did a story on a young Pakistani boy, and he had a reputation for being a street performer. And he would walk on coals and stick knives into his arms and all kinds of weird things. And he was jumping around from housetop to housetop. He fell and he passed away.
Jeez.
So he just wasn't able to. He didn't respect the fact that pain could happen and it actually killed him. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Well, and I think lastly, what can come out of this? Anything positive? Well, I don't know. There's a small Canadian biotech company called Xenon Pharmaceuticals, and they found a family in Newfoundland where several members of the family were affected by this condition. The boys in the family had broken their legs and even, different things in their body multiple times, and the company found out about this. They realized, hey, they're not feeling anything, and they sequenced their DNA and started to see something different there. So their goal is to try to find out what this DNA issue or mutation is so that they can actually use that in medicine for chronic pains like lower back, osteoarthritis, things like that. So maybe something good will come out of this if they figure out how to kind of turn off a gene that allows you to have pain. So
interesting.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Looking at that picture, I don't want that happening to me.
Yeah, no thanks.
Yeah. All right. What's next? Weird houses. So on the picture or on the screen right now, we have two boats that are on land. And these are actually places you can rent their homes or rental homes.
Yeah, they're not real boats.
No, they're not. But they look it, right? They look just like they're boats on somebody's front lawn or something. Mm. So it's on the coast, the north of San Diego, on the beachside town called Encinitas. So if you're going through that area, you can find these two homes located at 726 and 732 3rd Street. And these two boats, they're, you know, it's like they're just being sitting there. And they've never seen the sea. They've just were built and put there. One's called the SS Encinitas. The other one's the SS Moonlight. And they were built in 1928.
Well, so I didn't really see the purpose of them when I was looking into this. Like, not necessarily a purpose. But they do rent it out and they do generate income from it. So I think some company or association purchased them back in 2008 to preserve them, and they just use the rental income to pay off, you know, the loan they took out or whatever. It's cool. It's just kind of random.
It's weird.
Yeah, random. Why would you do, like, why would you, was it a hobby? Is it just something funny? I'm just curious why someone would do that.
Yeah, I don't know the origins of it, but it makes me feel, when I think of this, as somebody said, hey, I'm going to build a boat. And then they started and somebody said, that's never going to float. Mm-hmm. So they're like, okay, well, we'll just leave it here and rent them out. It's kind of weird.
Yeah, they said that they used, I don't know if you said this already, but all recycled materials.
No, I didn't say that. Yeah,
they used all recycled materials. Yeah, just kind of like a weird passion project. I'm not seeing any, like, there was no, the person who built it was an engineer, right? A maritime engineer. So that was really the only thing tying that project to boats. Someone just said, I want to build, and they are legitimate houses. They were built there and they can't move, right, to my understanding. They are probably, they're on a foundation, but they look like boats.
Right. Yeah. It's really strange. You know, you hear of things that get converted, but this never was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. We've got the next one, which is different. It's called the Butterfly House. Now, when you look at this picture, those who are listening to this podcast, very colorful, and it's clearly the Butterfly House. I've never seen so many butterflies on a house, and here it is.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's owned by a retired school counselor and his wife. They married over 50 years ago. They purchased the house in 1977 and rebuilt and restored it. It wasn't like this at the time, but in 1990s, the wife started losing her sight. And eventually, she was what would be considered legally blind. However, she could still see bright colors. So she could see bright colors. So what did they do? They tried to make their house very, very bright. So lots of colors, lots of
free time.
Different things to look at. Yeah.
Lots of free time is what it is. Dang.
Yeah. Here's a little walkway to the backyard. It's looks like a pathway to an event or some kind of, something that somebody would pay to go in and see.
Yeah. I'm sure they get some tourism there or something very interesting. I don't know what to say about some of these things like this. It's just kind of like, cool.
Yeah.
You know, I just want a flagpole in the front of my yard. That's all I care about. I don't need 1,000 butterflies all over.
Yeah.
But cool. I guess somebody's had to do it.
Yeah. People take in different things and, you know, that's what happens. Okay. Well, there you go. The Butterfly House. Now the Fish House. So Fish House. This one, for those who can't see it, looks like a giant seashell with some trash cans in the driveway. It looks different. Very weird. Yeah.
Looks like a little bit of a, the whole thing looks very underwater-ish. Yeah. It looks like it's on like a reef. And then that top part doesn't quite look like a fish to me.
No. Maybe. No, it looks really more like a seashell to me.
Yeah. Maybe it's the perspective that we're seeing it from. Maybe there's another perspective that makes it look more like Fish House. But it's fire resistant.
Right.
The exterior walls are curved and also angled inward at 4 degrees. And that creates more resistance from earthquakes. Okay. So maybe there's some engineering to this.
Yeah, that's a positive thing.
Yeah.
4 bedrooms, 3 baths, 2 stories.
Yep, the shape deflects, accelerates wind around the structure. which reduces the chance of a fire, preventing fire from sticking and clinging to the house's surface. Wow. And there are 4 water jets that will immerse the exterior of the house in the event of a fire.
Not
so it's
bad.
Basically fireproof, it says, yeah. Outside. Yeah, interesting.
This is inside the house here. This is different.
Yeah.
I feel like you're in a SpongeBob cartoon or something with this.
Yeah, something. Or I thought of that bar from the first Star Wars movie. Not Star Wars Episode 1, but one of the older ones with Mark Hamill, where they walk in and that's like, you know, I can see a bunch of aliens sitting there enjoying a beverage or something. That's what it reminds me of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. No stairs, just got ramps. So there you go. I mean, I guess it's good for somebody on a wheelchair. You might have to have a powered wheelchair. But yeah, you could roll right up these ramps to get even to the second floor.
I'm always astonished too, like when these are passed to different owners, you know, what some of those people, what goes through their head, like, I have to have that. I have to have that fish house.
Right. Yeah. I wonder what it's worth if somebody tries this out. I guess there's somebody out there who likes and wants everything. So somebody will buy it.
And they might just want it because it's unique.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
so along with what you were saying, it's cool in the summer, it's warm in the winter, and this recycled styrofoam is called Rastra Block. Not bad. Okay, so we're going to go to the next one, and I actually kind of like the next one. Let's take a look at it. Well, no, this is the first, another ramp picture. And this one right here. This is called the Water Tower House in Seal Beach, California. All of these that we've looked at today are in California. But when you look at this, yeah, it just looks like a water tower, you know, from that any town might have across the country. But this one's got some windows and things like that.
So, yeah, it was a real water tower, I think.
It was. Yes, it
was. Yeah, that they converted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
From the 19th century, too. So it's not, it's been there a while.
That's right. So just a little bit of detail for people. 87 feet tall, that's the structure. It has an elevator that takes guests up to the 3-story housing at the top. And, of course, the visitors have an amazing view of the beach and the ocean. There's some pictures where you'll see that in just a minute. Constructed, like you said, in the 19th century as a water tower. And it's available for vacational rentals now. And as of when I looked at, this might be a couple years old, but $3,500 to $4,000 a week to rent this. Now, you're looking at this and go, why would I rent that? But we're going to see some pictures here that really are pretty cool. So this picture right here, not bad on the inside.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, it kind of looks good. And look, you can see the out the window into town. So we don't see the beach on this picture, but you can see what a view of the main strip there of downtown.
And it's not a little house. It's like 3,000 square feet, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is pretty good
that's
size.
That's what I saw when I just looked it up. 2 master bedrooms, a maid's quarters, and 4 bathrooms, and an entertainment room.
Jeez. This is one of the bedrooms here. Not bad.
Yeah.
Now this one, this one has a view out into the ocean. And you can see it through the windows here. I'd do it. I'd go there.
That's awesome.
Yeah. How about this one?
Yeah,
this is a cool spot. Yeah, that's a cool spot. Yeah, each picture makes me go, yeah, I think the value of that rental for a week is making more sense as you look at this.
Yeah, I was just looking at like it's about $500 a night, approximately, $3,500 on the low end.
Take a look at this. Take a look at this kind of gathering or party room.
Wow.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's just
cool. TVs.
Cool.
Yeah, that's cool. So there you go. I mean, I would do this. I would go here, you know, not by myself, obviously, but with a few people. It makes sense. So.
Yeah, this would be a cool one. The other ones, Fish House and Butterfly House, I don't know. That's not my bag. This one, cool.
Yeah, because you got the view, everything. You've got everything.
Yeah, this is pretty cool. And Well, it was purchased in 1995 for $800,000.
Amazing.
Yeah, that's quite a bit for a water tower house.
Right.
In 1995. That's some serious cash.
That is, yeah.
Anyway, but that looks pretty cool.
Okay, there you go. So our next topic is urban legends. We hit these every now and then. And this first one is called the Arizona Slaughterhouse Canyon. This is an old picture on the screen of the area with a train going by. It just doesn't look like much to me at all. I don't know if that's a house or whatever, but...
What is this one? What is this picture?
This is the Slaughterhouse Canyon in Arizona.
I mean, it looks creepy because it's an old picture.
Yeah. It's also known as Luana's Canyon. The urban legend of Slaughterhouse Canyon tells the gruesome tale of the 19th century gold miner who failed to come home to his family one night. So he had a family living in this area, and he supported them completely, but he didn't come home at one point. And without his earnings, the mother and her children couldn't buy food, and they began to starve. So Luana, which is the name of the wife, her children had become pale and weak from starvation. Every passing day, the children would cry and beg for their mother for food. But guess what? She didn't have anything to give them. She had no way to help the children, and one day she just couldn't take the crying and begging anymore. What do you think happened? Something not good, that's for sure.
Yeah, not good. Something that makes me mad.
Yeah. She snapped, not being able to watch this anymore or hear this. So she didn't want to see her children starve to death, so she took their lives. She grabbed a knife, and she ended their lives. So it says, I don't know if it's a legend or real, it says that she dismembered each of the little bodies and cut their flesh into small pieces. So that's awful if this is how it was. So by the time she was done, her wedding dress, I guess she was wearing her wedding dress this night, was, wasn't white anymore. It was just drenched in blood. And the massacre was
weird.
So
that makes me think it's a legend. Why would she
right,
be wearing her wedding right. dress?
Yeah, exactly.
That one's weird. Like this story's already creepy. You don't have to throw in a wedding dress now, because now people are saying, now they're going to see, that they've seen her walking around in her bloody wedding dress.
Right.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Right. That's the one there that makes you kind of wonder if this is really true or not. Mm-hmm. She picked up the remains of her children, threw it into the river, and then she collapsed to the ground and cried hysterically over what she had done. And she knew that she wouldn't be able to endure this anymore. She cried all night in the rain, and eventually she just died herself from starvation over the next night into the next morning. So here's the thing. Slaughterhouse Canyon is a 12-minute drive away from Kingman, Arizona, and many ghost hunters go there and travel there and claim they can hear in the canyon on a quiet night a painful, horrifying scream and sobs from a heartbroken mother who, I guess, would have been taken in madness. Yeah. Crazy.
Yeah, I just asked AI. They said that there's no evidence that that is a true story, but it was known that, like, miners and stuff, they could, if they weren't finding things or during the gold rush, people were starving and stuff that were commuting from different areas for mining. So, I mean, it'd be interesting to find where that source, like, where that originated from. Did it?
Right.
I don't know.
It's like a lot of urban legends, are they real? And what are they based on? Some story probably that got exaggerated, but who knows? The big thing is, do people hear the screams and sobs? That's something people can find out for themselves, I guess, if they go there.
Yeah, that would be legit.
Yeah.
That would change my mind about it.
So, one more. And this one's the Colorado Ridge Home Asylum. So, in this picture here, this is... This kind of looks like an old elementary school that got closed down, but it's an asylum facility that opened in 1912, and it housed patients that were mistreated pretty bad. Some who were even mentally incapable, but had been left there by family members. And, you know, 1912 all the way to 2004, people, well, let me back up. So I'm not sure that it was open until 2004, but people would say they would hear screams and different sounds coming from that building, even up till 2004.
Interesting. It reminds me of in, I don't know if you remember this, up in Brigham City, Utah.
I remember
that. There was a big school. It was always referred to as the Indian School. And the story went that it was, before it was a school for Native Americans, it was like a hospital for, like, during World War II, and that they would, you know, test things out, and they would, there's all these underground tunnels, apparently. That part is true. There were really were underground tunnels. And it just, all this creepy stuff about it. And then they turned it into this Native American school, or school for Native Americans, and for people in that area. And all this creepy stuff was happening. So then they abandoned it, and it was so expensive to tear down that it pretty much just stood there for like 20 years. And, you know, people would break into it and do all kinds of stuff. I may or may not have tried a couple times to see if there were underground tunnels, or what kind of creepy stuff lies. It was heavily patrolled. There was always cops around it. In fact, one time I drove some friends up there, and we did have a car full of airsoft guns, because that was the thing we were doing back then, is we would find creepy places and have like an airsoft war. We were 19, 18, maybe even maybe 16, 17 even for that. But anyway, so we went up there. We had mag lights. We had those. We had, and they looked like real guns. We just had a whole backseat of all that stuff. And we were driving around the complex, and we did get pulled over by a cop. And he was like, he was pretty upset. And he was like, "You're trespassing." And we said, we were like, "What are you talking about? We were just, it's right off the main road." And it was right next to a Dairy Queen. We were like, "We're just trying to get to the Dairy Queen." It was either Dairy Queen or a Burger King, something like that. But we were like, "Yeah, we were just, we passed it accidentally." And so we thought we'd turn around in here. And then he saw the flashlights. And luckily my friend had covered the airsoft gun, so that wouldn't cause any issues. And, you know, he was like, "Well, what are you doing with all these flashlights?" And we're like, "Dude, it's dark out. We're driving at night. Like, we got space blankets in the back too, just in case. You never know what's going to happen." And the fact that we didn't actually step out of the car, well, you know, is essentially what saved us, because we were just driving around. But anyway, moral of the story is, it's heavily patrolled. Lots of people are messing with it. Lots of ghost stories. Very, very creepy. So that's what this one reminded me of, is stuff like that, where, and since then, at this school that I was talking about, they've since torn it down finally, which is kind of a bummer, because it was a cool place to go check out. But, and then same thing with this location, I believe, is it was torn down. Right. But anyway, that's what I thought of when I saw this, is, you know, there's always, there's lots of abandoned buildings wherever you live, and some of them might have kind of a creepy background that you don't even know about, and they're cool to check out, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so. No, I think that's funny, and that's, yeah, you know, some of these Indian schools, I think they were a real thing. There were some mistreated Native Americans in some of these schools, and yeah, so who knows what might have happened in the one in Brigham City. And this one, just a little bit of detail here. In 1940s, there was forced sterilization practice in here. 1950s, a newspaper quoted an administrator who said that the home's adult patients were far too mentally competent to be in the home, but they were, because their families had abandoned them. He blamed poor testing practices, and patients' youth were admitted for oversight. 1970s, the campus was ordered closed, cracks in the walls, foundational problems, shifting ground. 1980s, there was a report of residents getting neglected due to understaffing and so on and so forth. And in 1992, the Ridge Home closed. So, yeah, it's got a history of some mistreatment there and things like that. So, yeah, these things happen.
Yeah, very strange.
Yeah. Okay, this is just a picture of inside the building before. It's a few years old now, but... Okay, we are at the last topic. It's just a fun, quick little one before we end up the episode. The strangest jobs that somebody might have involving an animal. You know the topic, but before the topic, what can you think of? Anything out there that's just a strange animal job?
I mean, first thing that comes to my mind is those who are in charge of like horses or cattle. Insemination or retrieving sperm, stuff like that. Like that's a pretty weird job to me.
Yeah, you know,
that and maybe is. that's one thing of a larger job. But when I see that, I'm like, that's kind of. I get it. I know why you need to do it. Also, very weird. If I had to do it, I'd be like, this feels weird. No pun intended.
Yeah, it's definitely not something that I'd get excited about going to every day, putting a really long glove on and doing weird things like that.
Yeah, I had to, I volunteered at a, my wife's a veterinary technician for those who are listening. And so while she was doing her vet tech schooling, they had a kind of like a, not a camp, but like a little thing where we traveled a couple hours, got a hotel room, and then they went out to an underserved area and helped spay and neuter animals. I was there simply as the supporting husband, and they had all these stations set up where they would use anesthesia. They would do the surgery and the students could help, and like sit in. And I don't even know if this was sanctioned, to be honest with you. I don't know exactly how it worked, but they had all these stations. So I'm just there to support. And they were like, we need your help. I said, okay, what do you need my help with? And there's a mom of another girl that was there. And, she was like, okay, I'll help too. And we end up getting put onto all the animals after the surgery. These are like, some of them are like homeless animals. Mm. So they are not well kept, like well shaved and stuff like that, like ones that they've caught and things like that. And we were in charge of, well, as they woke up, we had to do anal temperatures on them. And so me and this mom, who both were just here hanging out, she was a young mom. Like, her daughter was probably like 16 or whatever. So she was in her 30s or 40s maybe. But, we're just sitting there temping these dirty dogs, anal temps. And then me and her just looked at each other and she looked at me and she goes, how the hell did we get wrapped into this? Right. And I was like, I don't know. That's the last time I ever went to one of those little boot camp thingamajiggers. So I never had to deal with the other part, but... And I've never had to stick my arm up a cattle's butt, but I have experienced a little bit of something, right there that wasn't.
That's strange.
It haunts me every day. And the smell, poof, it was bad.
Oh, I bet. It's crazy. Well, look, that's kind of what this is, this next job. It's called, but in a much smaller scale, fortunately. It's called chick sexing. Chick sexing. S-E-X-I-N-G. So it's a method of distinguishing the sex of chickens and other hatchlings, usually by a trained person called a chick sexer. Chick sexing is practiced mostly by large commercial hatcheries to separate male and female chicks.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, the female chicks, they know that they can be used for reproduction. Unfortunately, a lot of the male ones are actually... dispose of. Mm. And that's sad. Now, yes, they do make sure that they pull enough for the males that they need for stuff that they need to do, but it is sad to hear that some of them are disposed of.
Yeah, it's a lot of waste, so much waste.
Yeah, it is. So here's a little bit of the detail, because people are probably wondering, okay, how do you even see what the sex is on one of these, because they're so small, right? So it involves squeezing the feces out of the chick, and that opens up the chick's anal vent and then allows the chicken sexer to see if there's a small bump which they would then indicate and determine that it's a male. Hmm. So it's not a cow or a dog, but it's a chick, and it's still kind of a strange thing. But that's how they determine it.
Yeah. How much do they get paid?
You know what? I didn't really get any details on how much they get paid.
Okay. I feel better. I thought it was going to be like $180,000 a year or something. I was going to be like, what? It's in the United States, estimates suggest an average annual salary around $22,480 to $27,109. Some sources report an hourly rate of $13 to $14, which aligns more with like a $27,000 to $29,000 annual salary for 40-hour work week. So, however, highly skilled sex or chick sexers, especially those with years of experience or working in high demand areas like California, can earn up to $34,000 annually, or even as much as $60,000 in rare cases where demand outstrips supplies.
Wow.
Viable career.
It is. Maybe not in California, but in a lot of places.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, sure.
If you can just get the salary of out California, but not work, not live there.
Right.
$60,000 won't go very far there, but it sounds like that's the higher salary is there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, there you go, everybody. Random, strange stuff. There's a lot of unexpected types of jobs out there. So, Anthony, what do you think about this episode? Anything stand out for you? Anything that you liked about these few topics that we talked about today?
Yeah, I think I have a real shot at being a chick sexer. If things don't work out with my mobile food business.
There you go.
That's my next stop.
Yeah.
No. I'm always fascinated, as I've mentioned in the past, about health, anything human body related. So the CIP disorder is fascinating.
Yeah.
If only someone could have that and super strength or something. You know, you hear sometimes you hear about people that have superpowers. I don't know if we've talked about that in a previous episode, but like there's stories of like people that have shown some extraordinary gifts, things from like touching, you know, high voltage things or something and not being affected or whatever. Stories of stuff like that. And so if you could just take that plus CIP, we could have a real superhero.
We really could, you know,
in real life.
I wonder with CRISPR at some point somewhere in some dark black project, somebody's probably getting made to be exactly like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure.
For sure.
I know someone you interviewed recently was like, I don't know if that's widely if people are really going for that, but they have to. If there's a way, there technology is amazing, but humans always find a way to pervert it.
Yeah.
So you know there's someone out there trying to do stuff like that, and it'll be, you know, hopefully when that happens, that the person that succeeds is a good guy, not a bad guy.
Right. Yeah, but you're right. Something like that can happen. Heck, we've just heard something in the news recently about a woolly mammoth mouse. Did you hear about that?
No, I didn't hear about that.
So scientists have taken some of the genetics from a woolly mammoth and put it into the mouse because you know how woolly mammoth is very hairy, right?
Yeah, very furry.
Yeah, very furry. And they did that to a mouse. You'll have to look it up, everybody.
Yeah, I'm going to check
it out. It's hilarious. But these little mice look like these furry things without the, you know, the trunk and the horns or anything like that.
That's so funny.
Well, okay, so I'm with you. I like the strange medical condition. It's not something I'd like to have, but you're right. I was thinking of the same thing. It is this part of somebody who could be, you know, the next, you know, Wolverine or something. Who knows? Mm. Well, okay. There you go, everybody. Random Strangeness, another episode. Thank you for watching. Anthony, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks
again.
For
those of you out there, if you like the show and you like what you see, hey, support us. Go ahead and hit the subscribe button and hit a like. Do that kind of thing. Tell people about us. And we'd love to continue to bring good topics, people on the show. So, there we go. Everybody, remember, there's a lot of strange and unexpected in our reality. So always keep your eyes, ears, and minds open. Until next time, stay safe. See you, Anthony.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to High Strangeness. This was a glance at some of the strange that exists in our reality.